This is the Championship Chat Podcast, your home of news, views and debate from England's second tier.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Championship Chat Podcast, sponsored by Cards Accepted. I'm Ellie Jackson, of course joined by George Smith for the run-in. George, there are four Championship games left to go, and since we last spoke, there's been two more dramatic match days.
Dramatic, that's one word for it. I think at the very, very least.
That's another good word.
Crazy, crazy, crazy. I'm really looking forward to getting stuck into this one this week, I must be honest with you. And yeah, to be quite honest, as I've just said to you before we started, we've got a lot to get through. And for half of it, I don't think we know even know what to say because it's just that unpredictable. But as the comments came through in a few of our social media posts on Wednesday night, we bloody love this league, and this is why it's going to be some running. I'm looking forward to getting stuck into it and reflecting on two match days that where not a lot happened, but a lot happened, if you get my drift. It's kind of been a weird couple of game weeks, this.
Yeah, it would appear that nobody wants to stay up and nobody wants to get promoted. That's the general gist of this week's podcast.
It's because they love the Championship so much. That's what it is. They don't want to leave.
Yep, clearly. They want to be spoken about on our podcast. That's the only logical explanation.
Exactly.
And so we'll start at the top of the Championship as always. And as I alluded to there, nobody really fancies taking the bull by the horns because we'll touch a little bit on the weekend as we speak, but generally, of course, we'll be focusing more on the action we've seen on Tuesday and Wednesday night. And Leicester City, having won at the weekend in dramatic fashion against Birmingham, go and lose away at Millwall, who had just lost back-to-back away games to Rotherham United, one of the worst teams that's ever played in the Championship, and Huddersfield Town, a direct relegation rival. So, logically, they would then go and beat Leicester, who were top of the league, at the Den, 1-0. And it's a big missed opportunity for Leicester. Credit to Millwall for the way they defended, credit them for the reaction. But Leicester had 72% of the ball and created 0.33 XG. So they were good for about a third of a goal, despite having over 70% possession and only had three shots on target. The only real chance of note they had was for Iheanacho, which was cleared off the line by Billy Mitchell. And for a lot of it, it was just Leicester having the ball, circulating it from left to right as they do, and just very blunt, completely lacking the intensity and the precision needed to unlock the Millwall defence. And Millwall punished them. And what a goal it was, by the way, on the counter-attack. Really good play from Mitchell again to win the ball in midfield and then drive down the side. Good ball to Ryan Longman, who faces up Harry Winks with Fast completely out of the picture. And it's a brilliant finish. And I love the reverse angle where you can see it. It like clips off the bar. And it, because of how tight the netting is, it just goes straight down. And it's so aesthetically pleasing. It's a wonder goal. And Ryan Longman is someone that really burst onto the scene a little bit in the Championship, signed on loan from Hull, did really well. Thought, oh, this is a great pickup, because Hull then went and spent, I think, about £1 million, from what I remember, to sign him from Brighton. Phased out there, been in and out of the Millwall team, but he's then come up with some really big goals in the last few weeks. Obviously scored recently and then scores the winner again on Tuesday night. But for Leicester, this was a massive missed opportunity, having gone in to this match day 33, as we were. Top of the league with a game in hand. Not a lot's changed because of what we'll come on to, but 88 points, game in hand, but this losing at Millwall in the way they did and the manner of the performance will be a real concern for Enzo Maresca and the supporters.
Yeah, definitely. And I think you meant match day 43 there, not 33. We've gone back in time, haven't we, there?
Ah, yes. For some bizarre reason, I went 38 on a Premier League season in my mind then for a moment.
Leicester would have felt home and hosed on match day 33, probably, to be
Leicester
fair to them.
Wish it was match day 35. Oh, to be at match day 33.
But yeah, match day 43, Leicester, with a big opportunity, it felt like to get 3 points on the board and build that weekend win over Birmingham City, where, as you quite rightly said, they won it late on with that Steffi Mavadidi header. But they went to Millwall, and having seen Millwall's last couple of results with that defeat at Rotherham, defeat at Huddersfield Town, you would have thought that it was a nailed-on banker for an away victory. Excuse me. But as we see in the Championship time and time again, there is no such thing as a guaranteed result, and that was the case. A moment of brilliance from Ryan Longman to win it, as you quite rightly said, an unbelievable goal. really, really smart strike and probably be in contention for a goal of the season award, certainly in-house at Millwall at the very least. But for Enzo Maresca and Leicester City, like you said, it was a missed opportunity because of what happened around them. And we will touch on that, of course, with Leeds and Ipswich. But I think for Leicester, that they are certainly showing a sense of nervousness, aren't they?
They all are.
They all are. But Leicester, from the position that they were in, such a commanding position, they were absolutely flying along. And it just seemed a matter of time before they were going to be lifting that trophy aloft with the blue ribbons attached. And now all of a sudden, though they're still top of the league, which is quite remarkable after slipping up at Millwall, and that's a direct result of the other two, which we are going to mention, you look at Leicester's patchy form in recent weeks and it's quite worrying, to be fair. They've now lost five league games since mid-February. It's unheard of what we'd seen.
Do you think, I'm just trying to think why this would happen, why it would be. Do you think for a more possession-based team in Leicester, once that nervousness starts to creep in, that's when you start to play the slightly safer passes? And we all know if you're going to dominate the ball, you have to play with intensity and you have to play through the lines. You've got to play forward. And do you think once those nerves start to creep in, you start to take the extra touch, you start to play the extra sideways pass, and that is why they're still dominating games, still playing the same in terms of the style, but the productivity of that and certainly creativity, you know, think back to Bristol City and the complete lack of reaction once they went 1-0 down. And they created very little here for 90 minutes, but also particularly once they went 1-0 down, apart from the Iheanacho chance.
Yeah, and this is the common trend, isn't it? If you look back on these series of defeats that they've had since mid-February, they've fallen behind in all of them, except for when they lost 3-1 at Elland Road, where they took the lead, and obviously Leeds staged that dramatic comeback late on. So it seems to be a sense where when they fall behind, they seem to almost struggle to recover. But on the flip side of that, they fell behind quite early on to Norwich on Easter Monday and came back and won 3-1. So there's certainly a counter-argument to suggest that isn't the case. But it is certainly an area where it's bound to attract scrutiny. But I just think for Leicester now, it's quite clear that nerves are setting in. Same for Ipswich and Leeds we've seen this week. But I think with Leicester, it's slightly worse because they were so far in front. Has a feeling of complacency crept in? It's quite possible. And let's be honest, people will, at the end of the season, they'll go back and they'll find clips and predictions and things like that and poke fun at people who have said this, that and the other. But let's be honest, at the start of February, everybody was saying Leicester were champions elect. Everybody felt that was the case. They were miles in front. They were cruising along. And it's like what I said at one point in January. They were just taking the piss. It was literally just first gear, easy, let's just get to the finish line, job done, we're up. And now all of a sudden, we're in a position with literally a handful of games to go, five in Leicester's case with that game in hand. They've got Plymouth away tomorrow night, Friday, as we record this Thursday afternoon. That's a game on paper that Leicester will be looking at and thinking, it's got to be 3 points, but Plymouth want the points just as much for a very different reason, so it's not going to be an easy one. And then you look at Leicester's next two games after that. West Brom at home, not an easy one. Baggies on a good run, beat and run at the minute. Then Southampton at home, not going to be easy. Then they go to Preston on the penultimate weekend. Who knows? Preston could still be fighting for
the season.
I think you might know the answer to that one. I think you might be well aware of that, in that it is indeed your beloved Blackburn Rovers at the King Power on the 4th of May. Yes. So it's a bit of a mixed bag for Leicester towards the end, because ultimately, probably with the exception of West Brom, who I would argue are probably now home and hosed in the playoffs, they've got to play teams who have got everything to fight for themselves, because Southampton, as a result of Leeds and Ipswich slipping up and those couple of game in hands that they've got, they've given themselves a squeak of a chance now. So it's certainly not an easy running for Leicester by any stretch, and they've got to find a way to bounce back from that defeat at the weekend as soon as possible, because it was very out of character. It was very unexpected. But generally speaking, Leicester, they have tended, when they've had a setback, they've not always bounced back at the first opportunity. You think back to November when they lost to Leeds. They then lost the following weekend to Middlesbrough. When they lost at home to Middlesbrough in February, they then lost the following two after that. So they've certainly not bounce back massively when they've had a loss. So work for Enzo Maresca to do, but Millwall, you've got to give them huge credit. A massive result for Neil Harris, and it just proves how mental the Championship is. He's lost at Rotherham, but he's beaten Leicester and Southampton. It's just utterly, utterly bonkers, this division.
Ipswich didn't take advantage, and neither did Leeds United. Leeds obviously drew on the night, 0-0 with Sunderland, held at home. Obviously, we know how good the record's been at Elland Road, but quite a poor result for Leeds, I think, to beat a Sunderland side that obviously been thumped recently by Blackburn and generally haven't been playing too well at all. And it feels like, in particular, the attack is struggling to really function. There's not been a lot of cohesion in that front four. And probably quite an over-reliance on Crescencio Somerville, try and feed the ball to him, see if he can get his man beat players one versus one. I know Patrick Bamford and Joel Peru are not particularly fans' favourites at the minute, not really pulling up any trees. And quite a few shouts for Mateo Joseph, who's been very lively as a substitute, Spanish under-21 youth international now, to get a start, maybe this weekend against Blackburn Rovers. But Leeds, yeah, a real opportunity missed. And equally Ipswich didn't take advantage either, playing on Wednesday night, having lost 1-0 to Norwich on Saturday, which was, of course, a big game in the East Anglian derby. Then draw 0-0 at home with Watford. They did have some chances. Broadhead coming close when he hit the post. But I think the best qualities about Leeds and Ipswich is when they have had a bad result, they generally won the next game. You know, Leeds lost at Coventry at the weekend, Ipswich lost at Norwich. And for both of them, neither of them to follow that with a win is a bit of a surprise. Ipswich particularly, we know they've not lost back-to-back games this season, which has been why they've been so consistent. And Leeds' form at Elland Road, you'd have expected them to respond. So it really feels like the pressure is getting to the front three. And the form they've obviously shown all season to get them into these positions where they've nearly hit 90 points with still four to play for. They're just buckling under the pressure at the wrong moment.
They certainly seem to be, don't they? And I watched Ipswich's game with Norwich at the weekend, and I also watched Ipswich's game against Watford on Wednesday night. And Ipswich, well, in fact, in truth, I've seen each of Ipswich's last three games because I saw the Southampton thriller on Easter Monday as well. So I've seen all of their last three games. And against Southampton, they weren't at their best. Southampton did play pretty well, but obviously they staged that dramatic comeback, late winner from Sarmiento, and they were full of energy at Norwich. They were really, really flat. They were off the boil, and Norwich fully deserved the victory. They were by far the better side on the day.
Agreed.
Last night against Watford, it was a weird sort of game because Ipswich obviously had the best of the chances. As you've mentioned there, Broadhead hit in the post. Kiefer Moore was denied with a really good save. It just took them so long in each half to really get into their stride. Watford started the game quite well. They started the second half quite well. And then Ipswich, sort of last 10 minutes of the game, they were getting a little bit panicky, trying to pump high balls into the box at every opportunity, and didn't quite stick for them. So it's just very bizarre that Ipswich have now gone two games without scoring. And we know that Ipswich have been the entertainers of this league this season, certainly at home. So they'll be kicking themselves that they didn't capitalise on Leicester's slip-up 24 hours before, and Leeds's, of course. So it leaves us in a position where, quite frankly, anything could still happen. It's so, so hard to call. Leicester obviously hold the cards. They've got the game in hand over the two of their main rivals. So if Leicester win all of their games, they know that they've got the job done. They'll win the title. You look at Leeds's four remaining fixtures, and again, in their case, it's not easy. It's probably, with the exception of Middlesbrough, they've got to play three teams that have all got something worth fighting for still. Blackburn on Saturday, as we've already mentioned. Then Middlesbrough away the following weekend. Then they play Queen's Park Rangers away, which again,
might be safe by then, I would argue.
It's possible, but who knows with how things go in the next couple of weeks. And then they've got Southampton on the final day, which, of course, we were all bigging up a few months ago as the one that could potentially settle second place. Whereas now, unless Southampton really, really do have a fantastic 2 or 3 weeks and Leeds stumble a little bit, then effectively that might be a dead rubber, if certainly in Southampton's case, if they're just settled in the playoffs and preparing for those. For Ipswich, they've got Middlesbrough at home at the weekend, and that's not an easy one. Borough have been on a good run in recent weeks, to be fair to them. They've done really, really well. It's just a case of probably their form's come a little bit too late in the day to sort of propel them into one of those top six positions. But beyond that, Ipswich, they've got Hull away from home, Coventry away from home, and then Huddersfield at home on the final day. So again, they're all against teams that will certainly feel, I mean, excuse me, Middlesbrough Hull, they're probably out of the playoff race now, I would think, after their draw on Wednesday night, which we're going to talk about in depth, the playoff race in a little while. But beyond that, Coventry, penultimate game, and then Huddersfield at home on the final day, who knows what could be riding on that for both clubs. So it's certainly not an easy running, really, for anybody. They've all got difficult challenges because of the state of the league, where pretty much everybody, barring three or four, have got something to play for. So, being truthful, I don't think we're any closer to knowing how this is going to finish, because it's just quite remarkable that we went through a game week in midweek without them even scoring a goal between the three of them, never mind picking up a victory. So I think, you know, Leicester, they've got away with this one massively. They really have got away with it. I think Leeds will be kicking themselves. That's a game they should have won at home. Ipswich will be feeling the same. But at the same time, while we're on this subject, you've got to give credit to Tom Cleverley and Watford, because he's done a really good job there. I know they've had a few draws since he took over, but he's made them hard to beat. They look well organised. And I think when you consider they've played Leeds and Ipswich since he took over and had West Bromwich Albion away to be unbeaten through that run, I think he deserves a bit of credit, Tom Cleverley. So he's done well. But like I say, this battle for the top two spots, I can see it going to the final day. I just don't think we've got a clear picture yet. It's bonkers. It's absolutely bonkers.
I was going to talk about Watford a little bit later, so I'll just do that, I suppose, now. Massive, massive credit to Tom Cleverley for the way he's coming. If you look at he's placed Daniel Farker, Carlos Corberan, Gary Rowett, Kieran McKenna and Ryan Lowe, and they're unbeaten. Sure, a lot of draws in there, but you look at where they were and some of the tactical game
impressive
plans that he's outlined. It's been very impressive and very good work from him early on. We know this is not a Watford squad that's got the talent advantage of years gone by with Ismail Assar, Joao Pedro, etc. But I think he's done a really good job. Would you give him the job based on, I suppose he's still got four games, he's clearly very well liked and thought of at Vicarage Road. I kind of feel like Watford have done everything at this point. They've had a bit of a go with every sort of style of manager and every sort of approach. So why not? I'm kind of thinking, why not? What they got to lose?
Yeah, it's a difficult one, isn't it? Because you've mentioned there, they have tried every means, really. They obviously went down the route of experience in the Premier League with Claudio Ranieri and Roy Hodgson. Then obviously Valerian Ismail came in last summer. Felt like a good move at the time. I thought it was a bit harsh, to be honest, that they pulled the trigger when they did. I know the form had a bit of a dip, but I still thought it was a little bit harsh. But I always think there's a potential risk factor with a caretaker where that honeymoon period can end quite quickly. But we've seen in the past where managers have had a caretaker stint and landed the job full-time and done quite well. The one that springs to my mind, being a Wednesday fan, for example, is Stuart Gray all those years ago. He was initially the caretaker and then he ended up with the job permanently for the best part of 2 years and did a really good job in that time. So there's certainly this scope, and Tom Cleverley, he knows the club well. The fans are very, very fond of him. The players are clearly buying into what he wants from them. And yeah, he'll probably be a little bit frustrated that he's not got more wins on the board, but he's not lost any games so far. And like you said, he's faced some really tough tests. And let's not forget, they were 2-0 up at West Brom. They were beating Leeds twice and played really, really well in that game. I watched that game and they were excellent. They did. They played really, really well that night. And I was particularly impressed by the way they got forward and got in the faces of Leeds. There were no fear at all. So in that sense, I think he's certainly worthy of a crack. It's obvious now he's going to see them through to the end of the season. There's no doubt about that. And I think Watford have certainly got to have a little think over the summer. Maybe it is time to go down that route. But we thought they were going to change when they went for Rob Edwards, didn't we? We thought, hello, this is finally a change in tact and a change in approach. But if they give it to Tom Cleverley and Watford start next season a little bit slow and not up to the expectations that are there, are they going to fire him by October? Most probably. It's just the Watford way. So yeah, I suppose it depends on how ready he is, he feels, to step into the job full time. So we'll see, but certainly for the here and now, done a really good job, and be interesting to see how many points they can get from the final four games.
I think the fact he's got a bit more of an affinity at the club than most caretakers would when they come in gives me more confidence that it's not just a honeymoon period. And I just feel like they're in a state of flux, that they might almost need to fall upon something, Watford, as in what the best plan is going forward, because I don't have any confidence in those making those decisions to conjure up a more succinct plan. So this might be the best route. Turn our attentions to the bottom of the table, George. we have our first relegation. We've known it for a number of months, but Rotherham United have been relegated back to League One after a finally breaking the cycle, a six-year cycle of promotion and relegation. They stayed up last season under Matt Taylor, but it has been a truly woeful campaign. With insult to injury, really, by the fact that we saw the worst refereeing decision possibly in the history of the Championship on Wednesday night. Don't have to take our word for that. Take the word of Lee Peltier, who was the man penalised for handball 20 yards out, as he replied to the video that we put on our social media platform earlier.
One word answer. Mental was what Lee Peltier said.
Lee
and
Peltier,
I can't disagree with
the Championship Track podcast, exclusive that it was a mental decision. And to be honest, it summed up Rotherham United's season, because it has been a terrible season for them. Back-to-back defeats over the weekend confirmed their fate. And having started so well last season under Paul Warne, they've really regressed since he left for Derby County. They've actually played 77 games since Paul Warne left. How many wins, George, out of 77?
Ooh, are we talking league and cup or just league?
Just league.
Just league, 77. I'm going to go for about 9.
12, so slightly better than you predicted, but pretty terrible off nonetheless. They stayed up. I think it's fair to say that had they not made such a great start to last season under Paul Warne, they wouldn't have stayed up. That is irrelevant, ultimately. It's a bit of a moot point. But if we're taking the average points per game from when Matt Taylor came in, they probably would have gone down. They haven't won an away game since November 2022, which is unbelievably poor. Away at Sheffield United, correct. And looking at the squad, looking at where the fan base is, it feels like they are probably in the worst shape going down than they have been.
Yeah.
Certainly last time they were relegated on the last day at Cardiff, there was a sense of injustice, a sense of unlucky. They'd had that massive fixture pile up as well. They don't seem as united at all. I don't think the squad is anywhere near as likeable. I think that a lot of the fans are quite happy to see it get ripped up. They did spend a little bit of money in the summer. They bought Sam Nombe for a seven-figure fee the first time they've spent that level of money on a player. But they went down the experienced Championship route with the likes of Hall's been there for a couple of years. Daniel Ayala was a terrible free transfer, albeit wasn't costing them a lot of money. Klukas, Hugel, these sort of names that have been in and around the Championship but just haven't done enough to keep Rotherham United in the Championship. And the fans are used to relegation, but there's been a big disconnect with this group. I think Liam Richardson has to have question marks as well. Someone who I, you know, spoke on this podcast many times saying that I thought he was really harshly treated at Wigan and deserved another crack at the Championship. But you can't say he's come in and improved them. In fact, they've probably got worse. That said, he is not solely responsible for this relegation. Probably 50% can go to him and 50% can go to Matt Taylor and Tony Stewart and what was done in the summer. But it definitely feels to me like this is nowhere near as assured that they will bounce back at the first time of asking as they have the previous three times they've been relegated to League One.
Definitely not. But first and foremost, they need those at the top in terms of those. They've got to try and rebuild a connection between the club and the fans, because that this season, as you've quite rightly said, is really, really broken this year. And Rotherham, thinking back to our 1-24s that we made all those months ago, I actually had Rotherham to survive this season in 21st place, purely because of so often you spoke about Rotherham, of that belief and that character, and certainly not the best in terms of footballing ability, but they so often were a team that would never down tools, they would fight for the badge, they would be committed, and we've seen everything but that this season, to be fair. They've been in such a rut, and I agree with you, Liam Richardson, harshly treated at Wigan Athletic. I felt when he got the job, it was quite a solid appointment for Rotherham for the predicament that they were in. But he's won 2 out of 23 games, and that does include the game in the FA Cup, which they lost to Fulham in the third round. So he's 22 league games, he's won 2, and he's lost 16 of them. It's an indefensible record, but as you've quite rightly said, this is not all down to him. But at the same time, he was appointed to improve Rotherham, as any manager is, and they've got worse, to be quite honest. They have got worse. He's won the same amount of games as Matt Taylor had won, and Matt Taylor was shown the exit door by November. So, you know, Tony Stewart, the Rotherham chairman, has been taking a hell of a lot of criticism on social media in recent months for his lack of investment. The training ground has come under a lot of scrutiny. It's in desperate need of work. It's been compared to standards of a non-league club, to be quite blunt. It has been compared with those playing in the National League. So it's quite clear the facilities need desperate modernisation. The squad needs serious, serious work. But having said that, there are players in that team, should they be retained, who probably could do a job at League One level. But you look at that Rotherham team, and I couldn't name a single player with the exception of Victor Johansson that would walk into another Championship 11.
Agreed.
The quality just isn't there. They've been cut adrift for absolutely weeks now. And when you think back to the start of the season, and obviously Sheffield Wednesday were the only club that were chasing them, Wednesday have left them for dust now. And other clubs as well. They've just been left so far behind that it's just got to the point with Rotherham now where every time they've taken to the field, you've just thought, well, they're going to lose. There's no doubt about it. But they did beat Millwall a couple of weeks ago, so at least they got something to cheer about on Easter Monday. But apart from that, it's been so, so poor. You look at that Millwall game, it's the only time they've scored in the Championship since the 24th of February. So it's quite clear. They just got no quality to score goals. They constantly get beat. And ultimately, they've got what they've deserved. But like you said, bouncing back this time might not be so simple as it has been in the past, because they've always been the sort of the big boys in League One, the ones that a lot of teams have feared. They've always backed them for promotion, whereas this time it feels like there's a hell of a lot of work to be done to get them into a position where they're going to be ready to compete to bounce back at the first attempt. So I think it's a discussion we were going to be having before too long, and it's quite surprising really that they lasted up until, what was it, six games to go when the confirmation of them going down was official. But the job is done now. They can prepare for life back in League One, just ride out these final four games. But it doesn't excuse the fact that refereeing decision at the Hawthorns on Wednesday night, as soon as I saw it on social media, I thought, he's not even in the box. Look back and I thought, he's actually his head. Never mind his hand. Jeff Eltringham, the referee, he has got to come under a hell of a lot of investigation for that. Because ultimately, and obviously we're speaking hypothetically here, if Rotherham were in a position where they were still competing to stay up and say it was 0-0 at the time, that was given and they lost that game 1-0, and they went down, say, by a point, they'd be every right to feel very, very aggrieved. And I know it's obviously a very hypothetical scenario, but there are instances where it could have happened. And that is up. I mean, we've seen some shocking officiating in the Championship this season, as we have in recent years, but that was on another level, wasn't it? It was just absolutely unbelievable. I think it's probably the worst decision I've seen in my life. It was horrendous. Absolutely horrendous.
I think the biggest winners of the week, George, were probably Sheffield Wednesday, having picked up 4 points. It'd been a bit of a disastrous run for Danny Rale's side, losing 6-0 at Ipswich, obviously dropping points at home to Swansea, losing in a very poor manner at Middlesbrough. So to follow that up with a massive win at QPR 2-0, and to follow that up with a battling performance, a really poor first half against Norwich, 2-0 down. The second goal in particular quite self-inflicted, with James Beadle passing the ball out straight to the Norwich attacker, who squared it for Borja Sainz to make it 2-0. But this team has got fight, this team has got character, and since December, as you reeled off on the podcast Twitter page, only 7 teams have taken more points than Sheffield Wednesday. Since Danny Rale came in, Wednesday would be 14th in the Championship table. So they are performing just below a top half level for about 30 games now, and they got themselves back in the game with Iheanacho and Michael Smith scoring headers from set pieces. So without a doubt, they are the winners of the week. It brings them up to 22nd. Which is the highest they've been for a long time. Sheffield Wednesday have not been out of the Championship relegation zone since August the 12th. And therefore, if they, you know, there was a point where Huddersfield were winning at Preston on Tuesday night, and Wednesday were 2-0 down at home to Norwich. And the point swing of obviously Huddersfield losing 4-1 and Wednesday coming back to draw has really just really stuck the Bunsen burner under their hopes of staying in the Championship. And they've got Stoke on Saturday. And I think Sheffield Wednesday will stay in the Championship. I still do. Me and you had discussions after they'd obviously got beaten at Middlesbrough, and you were writing them off. Yes, I am going to call you out. You've written them off. And as I said to you then, every time Wednesday have had a really terrible result since Danny Rill's come in, they've backed it up with performances and they've gone again. I think they really struggle when they have to play three game weeks. I think they are better when they've got week-long build-ups. But I think they'll stay up. I think they'll get enough points.
Well, I must admit, after Middlesbrough, I was fearful. I really was. But I think that was more to do with the manner of the performance, because points-wise, they were still in a good position. They were still well within touching distance. But to go to QPR and get a win, which was fully deserved, I must say, it was no fluke. It was fully merited. QPR were really, really off the pace last Saturday, and Marty Sifuentes said as much in his post-match assessment. So that was a huge victory. Jeddy Gassama coming off the bench made a really big contribution. Norwich game Tuesday night, I was at Hillsborough for that one. Wednesday first half, really, really poor, really sluggish. Norwich, though, to their credit, really, really good. Really sharp, very technical in midfield with Marcelino Nunes, Gabriel Sara.
I think Kenny McLean's probably one of the most underrated players in the championship.
Yeah, Kenny McLean had a good game. He was drifting at it. He was drifting wide, coming central and popping up in all kinds of spaces. And obviously Josh Sargent at the top end of the pitch makes any team an attractive proposition. So for Wednesday to have come back from 2-0 down, Danny Rill making four changes at half-time really did send out a message as if to say, right, we've got nothing to lose here. We've got to go for it. And boy, did they go for it. Second half, certainly in the latter stage of the second half, they got what they deserved. They chucked everything at it. Will Volks, Callum Patterson made a huge difference from the bench. Paul Valentin as well down the right-hand side from wing-back. He got forward and gave Wednesday extra legs, a bit of energy down that side. And ultimately, Wednesday did something they've not done for what feels like a million years and score from a corner, which was quite impressive. And then they did it twice in 7 minutes. Two expert deliveries from Will Volks with Michael Hecker and Michael Smith rising high to nod them in. And ultimately, I've got to be honest, that was, after Michael Smith's goal, it was probably the loudest roar I'd heard at Hillsborough since probably the Peterborough miracle in the playoffs last year. And everybody around us could sense just how big a moment that could prove to be. And I think, realistically, if there was, say, another 10 minutes left in that game, I think Wednesday could have gone on and won it. They'd got the tails up. Norwich were backpedalling. David Wagner had to bring Shane Duffy on from the bench to bring that extra cover. And like you say, Danny Rill's men are now in a position where they've, thanks to Huddersfield, blowing that lead at Preston and then getting walloped, Danny Rill's men are in a position where they might actually achieve this. And that Stoke game on Saturday is absolutely enormous. And then Blackburn the following weekend, potentially just as big.
There is a scenario, George, and quite a likely one, and we'll come on to Blackburn more specifically later, where Blackburn go and lose at Leeds United on Saturday at 12:30, which is obviously quite likely at Elland Road, and Sheffield Wednesday beat Stoke, and then they're on the same points and play at Ewood Park in front of 7,000 people in the away end and on Sky Sports on Sunday the 21st. Which will just be mental.
Yeah. And it will be very interesting because, of course, for Blackburn, it's kind of a weird situation this weekend because this weekend, certainly in terms of the Saturday fixtures, they're going first. Plymouth play Friday night against Leicester. And then next weekend, that Sheffield Wednesday game is the Sunday where everybody else will have already played. Blackburn and Wednesday will both know where they stand, what's at stake, what position they're in. It could have a huge psychological effect on both teams. So personally, I think from a Wednesday point of view, this weekend coming is absolutely enormous. I think this weekend could be the weekend that makes or breaks them personally. If they can get a win against Stoke, which won't be easy, Stoke need the points just as much as Wednesday do, bearing in mind Wednesday will move level with Stoke if they get the win. If Wednesday can end this week with 7 points from nine, having played QPR, Norwich and Stoke, that would be an excellent return because QPR at the point of Wednesday going there were in excellent form. Norwich is still riding high and looking to cling on to that final playoff spot. So if Wednesday can get 7 out of 9 this week, it'd be really, really encouraging. But Danny Rill's men, it's just unbelievable really when you think about it because let's not forget this team, it required 13 matches to get its first win of the season. Danny Rill has not been given a single permanent signing since he walked through the door. He's had four loan signings. Two of that four missed out on Tuesday night. Arguably two of Wednesday's best players, EK Ubo and Jan Pervaeda, they weren't even in the squad due to injury. So realistically, Danny Rill is literally working with the squad that was handed to him when he walked through the door back in October. I mean, I'm going to be biased. I'm a Wednesday fan. I'm going to be, people listening to it might think that, but I genuinely believe if Danny Rill keeps this Wednesday team up, which with the exception of a few, is not a championship standard squad, I think it ranks as one of the biggest achievements we've seen in the championship. Ultimately, we waxed lyrical last week about Marti Cifuentes. I think if Danny Rill keeps this Wednesday team up, he would have been worthy of a position on that manager of the season shortlist. Let's be honest, because Marti Cifuentes, as brilliant a job he's done, and I really do rate it. And people can go back and listen to last week's podcast for proof. We wax lyrical about him. QPR do have a better squad than what Wednesday have got. The likes of Ilias Chair, Chris Willock, players like that, Lyndon Dykes, they're better attacking quality than what Wednesday have got at their disposal. And let's be honest, Marti Cifuentes did get reasonably well backed in the January transfer window. He got to bring in a few permanent additions. Danny Rill didn't. So I think Danny Rill, quite honestly, if he keeps this Wednesday team up, he deserves a hell of a lot of recognition from those outside of Hillsborough, because let's be honest, when he walked through the door, this outside was absolutely doomed.
If Sheffield Wednesday were the winners of the week, the losers were probably Birmingham, and they're in massive, massive trouble now, second bottom in the Championship after back-to-back defeats, losing very narrowly at Leicester, which doesn't feel fatal. You know, you lose 2-1 late on at Leicester, who are going for promotion. It's not really going to be the reason Birmingham look back if they do get relegated and say that was the turning point. However, losing at home to Cardiff is very damaging. Again, Cardiff are a decent side, but they've got nothing to play for. And to have picked up, you know, you look at Birmingham's last three home games. They lost to Middlesbrough, who were not in the best of form at the time of playing them. They lost to Watford, who had literally just sacked their manager and equally were not in the greatest of form. And they lost at home to mid-table Cardiff. So you can have all the grand designs to build a £60 million stadium, Tom Wagner, which I fully applaud. And I am really excited that Birmingham finally got owners that seem they've got their head screwed on. In the most part, albeit if they get relegated, it'll probably be because of a decision that the owners made to swap John Eustace for Wayne Rooney. However, that stadium might be being built in League One, because I really expected Gary Rowett to get a hold of this squad. And the performances are just set, like, they're just too safe. They're just quite limp. And I feel like they've had three home games where they really should have gone for it. And to have picked up no points from those three teams that I've just discussed, they have still got to play Rotherham away and to play away at Huddersfield, which are massive, massive games. But they're going to need minimum 4 points from those games now. They've really put the pressure on that it's shit or bust, really, for Birmingham, to be honest, and staying in the Championship. And with so much positivity going on off the pitch, for the first time in a long time for Birmingham fans, Birmingham's a really good club. They've got really good supporters, and I would like them to have some success. But they've not been good enough, and ultimately Gary Rowett's not had the desired effect and not really got his teeth into the team as I thought he might.
Yeah, not particularly. I mean, it was obviously a really sort of gut-wrenching Good Friday for them, because they lost 2-1 late on at QPR, having been in front for a long stint in that second half. In fact, no, they weren't. I beg your pardon. It wasn't like that, was it? Birmingham took the lead just past the hour mark, and then Steve Cook levelled it up straight away. I beg your pardon there. I thought it was very early on in that second half Birmingham took the lead. But then you look at Easter Monday, they beat Preston 1-0 at home, and that was a good result. Preston, probably the better side on the day. They had a lot of chances, but Jay Stansfield kept his composure when it mattered, and obviously got Birmingham all 3 points. Leicester away, that was always going to be a really, really hard game. I don't think you can be too critical of that one. Nobody realistically probably expected Birmingham to get anything from that. But Cardiff at home midweek, that's one of those that you probably put a ring round if you're a Birmingham fan sort of 2 weeks ago, and you circle and think that's one we've got to get maximum points from. And if you actually look at the history books, and we actually tweeted this on the podcast on Wednesday, Birmingham's record against Cardiff in the last few years has been atrocious. They've now only won one of the last 12 against them. So there seems to be a bit of a hoodoo there. But as you've quite rightly said, Birmingham's remaining fixtures, goodness me, those two away games are enormous. The Huddersfield one on the penultimate weekend, that could be absolutely massive. Bear in mind, this weekend, Coventry at home, that's not going to be an easy game. Coventry are still scrapping to get into the top six. Then they've got Norwich at home on the final day, who could well be in a position where they've got to win to get in the top six. Who knows? So the Rotherham game, that on the 20th of April, so a week on Saturday, that is must win. If Birmingham fail to beat Rotherham away from home, I think that potentially could seal their fate. We've seen Huddersfield go there recently and fail to win. Millwall as well. So those, it's sort of weird because these teams at the bottom, obviously Huddersfield did beat Millwall last weekend. But it does seem to be a cycle where there's teams at the bottom now where they're struggling to beat the teams they should be beating. But in Sheffield Wednesday's case, they seem to have done quite well against the teams in and around them in the table. Beating QPR, won away at Rotherham, beat Birmingham at home in February. So Wednesday seem to be handling that a little bit better than those in and around them. But on the flip side of that, you mentioned earlier on, and I might be leading you into your next segment here, you mentioned obviously Wednesday being the big winners of the week with that four-point haul. Plymouth obviously getting 4 points as well against a team who obviously were all but relegated when they went there. But obviously against QPR coming back and getting a point on Tuesday night, which was really big for them as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Plymouth very much were my next. I was more for Wednesday in terms of who they beat and the way they came back against Norwich. But Plymouth, yeah, You're absolutely right, had to go to Rotherham and win. Did go to Rotherham and win. Looked like they were going to lose to QPR. Got themselves back in it and got a point. And the reaction has been probably what we expected, to be honest. They've gone very much back to tried and tested, and it looks a lot more like how it looked under Stephen Schumacher, with Dan Scar being recalled, Joe Edwards in midfield, Barley Mumba getting more of an advanced role on that left-hand side in the 4-3-3, in the 3-4-3. So they look more like Plymouth we saw earlier in the season, and they've been big results for them. And when you look at some of the other teams, obviously Millwall lost at Huddersfield but beat Leicester. They took 3 points. Huddersfield were on course for a great week at half-time but then capitulated to lose 4-1, having beaten Millwall at the weekend. And then Plymouth got 4 points as well. So all of those teams will be quite happy, I think, with the week that they've had. And particularly for Huddersfield and Plymouth, they really needed those big weeks, because probably a fortnight ago we were saying it's two from Wednesday, Plymouth and Huddersfield, but now it doesn't feel like that at all because of the points that those three teams have been able to pick up in the last few weeks.
It's just so hard, because I think, being honest, I still think anybody from QPR downwards can drop. I've got to be truthful. Swansea, they've probably just about done enough now. Big win for
Swansea
them.
Swansea will be fine. I think QPR will be fine as well. I think QPR will stay.
Well, I think QPR will be... I think QPR will be okay, but they'll probably be a little bit more anxious than they were this time last week. I think we can say that at the very least. To have only taken 1 point from the last six available, they'll be disappointed with that. They weren't very good against Sheffield Wednesday, I must admit. They were off the pace that game. I was surprised just how poor they were. Didn't see the Plymouth game, but obviously they blew the lead quite late on. But QPR at the moment, they're 4 points ahead of Sheffield Wednesday, which is... it's a healthy-ish cushion to have at this stage. So I think QPR will be okay, hook or by crook. But ultimately, I just cannot, for the life of me, call a two that I think will drop. I still think it is impossible to say. It's just so unpredictable what could happen in the coming weeks. You look at the fixture list, say, for those at the bottom this weekend coming. Blackburn away at Leeds, Birmingham at home to Coventry, Huddersfield at Bristol City, QPR at Hull, Millwall at home to Cardiff, Sheffield Wednesday, Stoke facing each other. It's really, there's some hard games in there for the teams at the bottom. I could see QPR getting something at Hull. Hull's home form is a real concern. I wouldn't be at all surprised if that happened.
You're out a little bit now as well.
Possibly. And looking at Huddersfield, they capitulated at Preston the other night. We've seen the footage of Delano Berzoig having an argument with the fans. That's not healthy. It's not good to see. Huddersfield just continue to capitulate and squander leads. Birmingham at home to Coventry, bit of a derby element in there. Not an easy game. Sheffield Wednesday, Stoke. Who knows? It could go either way. Wednesday will fancy the chances at home, big crowd behind them, and be energised after what happened against Norwich. Huddersfield at Bristol City. I mean, Bristol City, as we saw on Wednesday night, obviously blew Blackburn Rovers away, and Bristol City are in pretty good form at the minute. They've amassed the most points since the restart after the international break. and Huddersfield's away form is pretty torrid, let's be fair. So big, big weekend coming up, and I honestly believe this weekend could certainly take us a step closer to deciding the situation, but I wouldn't be at all surprised if we go into the final day where at least one of those relegation spots still isn't sealed. Massive, massive couple of weeks this.
And obviously, huge. Blackburn Rovers are the team we've not really spoken about yet. Probably the worst display, the worst time as well to throw in at Bristol City, losing 5-0. And they're now only 3 points above the relegation zone. They were 5 points before this double game week. And just the worst time. The goals, the manner of the goals they've given away. Dom Hyam had an absolute shocking night at Bristol City, at fault for all three of the first goals. But he wasn't alone, and a lot of players were below par. And the good thing, what John Eustace has done, albeit they've only won once since he came in officially, although he's very much claiming the Stoke win as well, that they've stopped conceding a lot of goals. You know, they'd only conceded two goals twice since he came in. And that was away at Preston, a 2-2 draw in which they were 2-0 up, and a 2-1 defeat at Swansea. So to concede five away at Bristol City was a shocker. They've picking up injuries again. Ryan Hedges is now out for the season, who just come back and had been a big player for them. And is just a really good footballer and helps them to really transition from defence to attack really well. So they've lost him. Sigurdsson's out for the season. Flex out for the season. Harry Leonard's out for the season. So all of a sudden that squad is shrinking at a pretty rapid rate. And to throw in your worst performance, maybe of the season, certainly worst performance under John Eustace, probably was the worst performance of the season, against a Bristol City side that had nothing to play for. And I have to say, we're very good, very, very good, capitalised on the chances. But the most damning thing I can say about Blackburn is there was one team that played on Wednesday night that looked like they were playing for something, that there was some jeopardy on the line for them. And it was not the team that's 3 points above the relegation zone. So going to Elland Road on Saturday, they have got to get a reaction. Ultimately for Rovers, I think they one more win should do it. They've obviously got a terrible running because they've got Leeds away. Sheffield Wednesday at home, which is just a massive match for both teams. As I said earlier in the pod, very realistic that Wednesday go to Ewood Park on the same amount of points as Blackburn. So Blackburn would be ahead of goal difference if they beat Stoke and Rovers lose away at Leeds, which you would expect. Then they're at home to Coventry and then away at Leicester. So all the best. I think if they can take like the 4 points and they're definitely safe from those two home games. Ideally, from a Blackburn point of view, beat Sheffield Wednesday, draw with Coventry. But if they can beat Sheffield Wednesday, they'll probably stay up. And if they don't, or if they don't take 4 points or 3 points from those two home games, they are in big, big trouble.
They are. And ultimately, you know far more about Blackburn than me. But from where I sit and look at it, of course, as you've quite rightly said, as you've reported in the last few weeks, performances prior to last night had been a lot better, certainly in a defensive sense. Goals hadn't been flowing except for the Sunderland game. But the way I look at it is the fact that this team has now won 3 of its last 24 league games. It is a shambolic record since the beginning of December. Only Rotherham United have picked up fewer points than this team. John Eustace, yes, he's steadied the ship since he came in terms of stopping a drastic run of consecutive defeats, made them tighter defensively. But ultimately, he's got one win on the board in terms of manager, even if he does want to claim it as two, but technically it is one. He was not officially in charge of that Stoke game, certainly by the history books anyway. But the big concern I've got about Blackburn, and I've said it until I'm blue in the face, and I've said it a hell of a lot on this podcast, is the fact that when Sammy Smodic doesn't score, this team, generally speaking, doesn't score. There is such a reliance on him. And I've actually worked out a statistic on Sammy Smodic in terms of just how many of his goals have directly contributed to earning a draw or a victory, which is going live on the podcast Twitter page on Friday. And
exclusive
right now, exclusive again. If it were after Lee Peltier, it's now my exclusive. If it wasn't for Sammy Smodic's goals in terms of the ones that have directly contributed to a victory, not saying where he's scored in games and teammates have as well, just when he scored to earn a draw or a win, Blackburn would currently be 12 points worse off, and they will be 23rd in the league and all but relegated by now. Personally, I think he's an absolute shoo-in for the Player of the Season award, which, of course, the EFL awards are this coming weekend, and we'll react to them next week. So that is my argument for Blackburn. When he doesn't score, generally speaking, this team doesn't score. The last time Blackburn Rovers actually scored in a game that Sammy Smodic didn't score in was the 24th of February when they drew 1-1 with Norwich when Dominic Hyam scored. It's a really worrying trend. Yeah, there's no dressing it up. Sammy Smodic has had a fantastic season this year. whatever happens, he's more than likely going to move on in the summer. There's going to be a lot of suitors for him. But Blackburn are in a position now where they're looking over their shoulder. Who knows what the reaction is going to be to this drubbing at Ashton Gate. Leeds away is probably the worst possible game they could have asked for following that. And ultimately, you look at that running, and Sheffield Wednesday game aside, Blackburn are major underdogs in three of the four games coming up. Because Leicester on the final day, who knows what could be riding on that. They could be going for the title. They could be needing a point just to get in the top two. Coventry still plugging away to try and reel Norwich in. Missed an opportunity themselves losing at Southampton this midweek. Leeds will be desperate to get back to winning ways after two games without a win. I fear for Blackburn. I really do. The longevity of their form is just so uninspiring. And we said, didn't we, about 3 or 4 weeks ago, that this running that they got was going to be so, so difficult. And I just think it could be them, you know. I think it could be them that do end up dropping because of the lack of confidence in terms of what we've seen since December. And you think back to November after that 3-0 win at Stoke, and we both said that this was the year they get in the top six. He's looking incredibly poor. But ultimately, to wrap up this segment on the bottom, I just haven't got a clue. Concretely, being honest now, without sort of humour, I don't know who he's going to drop. It could still be Sheffield Wednesday. It could be Huddersfield. Could be Birmingham. Could be QPR. Could be Plymouth. It could be any of them. I really don't know. So if you ain't got that seatbelt fastened yet, get it strapped on, because this is going to be one hell of a finish.
Yeah, so there's 5 points between 23rd and 16th. 50 points Mental. Will be enough this year. And I think from the fixtures, QPR and Millwall will probably be okay. But it's absolute chaos. Right, let's talk about the top six and the battle to finish sixth. West Brom are pretty much secure now in fifth, so don't care about them. We'll talk about you in the playoffs. They've got too much to talk about, West Brom. You don't qualify, I'm afraid. Norwich, still very much in command of the sixth place at the moment after 4 points, but they'll be quite gutted and frustrated that it wasn't six. Coventry are 5 points behind them, but have a game in hand. They beat Leeds United, but lost at Southampton. Probably not the word. Like, I think if you'd offered that to Cov fans before the week, they'd have probably took that. Preston are on the same points with the game in hand like Coventry, but their game in hand is away at Southampton, which is far tougher. Hull are now big outsiders, despite beating Cardiff, but drawing with Middlesbrough. The interesting thing with Hull is their game in hand is at Coventry. So if they can beat Coventry, I still think Hull might be slightly in the race, albeit outsiders. However, for me, Middlesbrough, I'm ruling out, despite what Michael Carrick says, because they've still got Ipswich and Leeds to play. So for me, still Norwich is very much to lose, and still I think Coventry in the second spot, and it'll be between those two. But Hull have still got a chance, because if they can go and win the last four and go beat Coventry, that directly takes points off them.
Personally, being honest, I think the race is run for Hull. Not in the sense where mathematically it's sort of impossible. I've just not seen enough from them to suggest that they've got the quality to get in there. I said this back in January when I saw them three games in a row, once in the flesh, and then twice on television when they lost at Sheffield Wednesday, they lost to Norwich, and then they scraped past Sunderland 1-0 away from home. They just didn't look convincing at all. You look at Hull and you think, on paper, they've probably got the best squad out of this chasing pack. There's a lot of talent in that team. Fabio Cavallio, Anas Sarouri, Jean-Michael Seri, Ozan Toufan, all great technical players.
Assembled squad.
It is a very expensive assembled squad. There's no doubt about it. But I don't think they've played particularly well in recent weeks. And I've thought that for a while. And there was on Wednesday night, excuse me, after the Middlesbrough game, a lot of Hull fans calling Liam Rossini out on social media for his tactics and saying that there only appears to be one way of playing. Hull's home form, really, really poor in recent weeks. It's so uninspiring. Their away form is pretty good, to be fair. I think only Leeds and Ipswich have won more games on the road this season. Leicester as well, possibly.
I think they're more suited to playing on the counter-attack a little bit like they did at
Cardiff. It's possible, isn't it? Because of the flair and the speed that they've got in the front line. But you look back at their home form, Hull have not won at home now since the 3rd of February. That's really, really poor. And in that time, they've lost at home to Swansea, drawn with West Brom, drawn with Birmingham, drawn with Leicester, lost to Stoke, drawn with Middlesbrough. That's really underwhelming for a team that, as you say, has been very expensively assembled. And before Hull fans maybe start saying, why are you banging on about what we've spent? Other clubs have spent a lot of money as well. There's no denying that. Hull are not on their own here. But I think for the talent that Liam Rossini's got available to him, Hull should be doing a little bit better. Their running's not easy. QPR at home this weekend. QPR obviously still need the points for different reasons. Of the four remaining games, Watford's the only team they've got to play who've not really got anything to go at now, and they're improving. Then they've got a massive game, potentially, against Coventry. And then they've got Ipswich. And then there's one more in the final day as well. So the next four, obviously, they've got that game in hand. So I look at it in the sense that Middlesbrough, Hull, probably out of it now. I think a draw for those two on Wednesday night against each other probably killed it. Certainly in Middlesbrough case, because they've not got that game in hand. As for Coventry, Norwich, and then Preston, it's interesting because obviously Coventry and Preston have both got a game in hand on Norwich, 5 points behind. Preston play Norwich this weekend at Deepdale. That ultimately, the outcome of that could either keep Preston's hopes alive or probably kill them off. Because I think if Preston, say they lose that game, if Preston go 8 points behind Norwich with four to play, I think it's probably very, very unlikely. The game in hand is at Southampton next Tuesday night. Not an easy one at all. But if Preston can beat Norwich, they've got a chance. So I wouldn't rule Preston out yet. Middlesbrough Hull, though only a point further back, I think it's a bit of a stretch. But the fact that Preston play Norwich and that gives them a chance to gain ground directly on them is certainly worthy of keeping Ryan Lowe's men in the hunt for now. Coventry, they'll be kicking themselves that they didn't get anything at Southampton, having missed a penalty through Hadji Wright early on. But having said that, I think if you'd have offered a Coventry fan 3 points from Leeds and Southampton back to back, I think they probably would have taken it considering the run that Leeds have been on. So it's not the worst week in the world for Mark Robbins. Really isn't. Norwich, like you said, be kicking themselves they didn't see it through. But having played Ipswich, they probably would have taken 4 points from the last two themselves. So it's not been the best week for Norwich and Coventry, but it's certainly not been the worst. Preston, 4 points out of six. Not bad, really, considering Watford have obviously been improving under Tom Cleverley, and then they blitzed Huddersfield in the second half on Tuesday night. So it keeps them in the hunt. But I think for Middlesbrough and Hull, them playing out that stalemate's probably killed it for both of them, though Hull, of course, have that game in hand, which could give them an extra lifeline. But personally, I still think this final battle goes between Norwich and Coventry. And if Norwich beat Preston on Saturday, I think that's probably Preston out of the race, even though they still have a game in hand, but 8 points, four to go, seems a bit of a stretch, I think.
Yeah, I completely agree with all of that. I want to talk about Cardiff before we finish, because there's been a lot of discussion about Errol Bullitt's future, very much up in the air. His contract is up in the summer. Does he deserve a new contract, George? I will make the case that I think he does. I think that although there was a bit of noise in January about how much he was going to be backed, I felt quite pessimistic about Cardiff coming into the season. I fancied them to be one of the teams that would get relegated actually for a lot of the summer. And it wasn't until some of their business late in the window, signing Bowler, Grant, adding some attacking flair, which was the real problem. Callum Robinson obviously hasn't really played this season and was left out actually on Wednesday night due to disciplinary issues. So he's not got the best out of him, but Grant's been decent. Bowler's been in and out, hit and miss. Mate's not really done it. Ramsey's been injured. So to say that the squad hasn't had that injection of goals in the way they might have hoped from the summer, to have them comfortably mid-table and competing, I think has been a big improvement on last season. I don't know what the ceiling is on Cardiff ultimately, because I think Bullitt's a good manager, but I think he might need investment for them to really challenge the top six, which we saw in the first half of the season. And ultimately, the squad is a mid-table to lower mid-table squad in terms of quality. So personally, for me, I think Errol Bullitt is a bit of a no-brainer, because I think Cardiff are the sort of squad and club where they haven't got loads to spend, where you don't take the leap with Bullitt. I think you make one bad managerial appointment and you're scrapping for your lives next season to stay in the Championship. I think you stay with Bullitt, who's a steadier pair of hands and they can look upwards. However, that said, I would have said the same 12 months ago when Sabri Lamouchi kept Cardiff in the Championship and said that they won't do better than him, he should stay. and they did come and get Bullock, who I think has been a success. So for me, it's quite clear. I would definitely give him another year for next year.
100%. I don't even think it's anything to hesitate about, to be honest with you. I think he's done a really, really good job for what he's had to work with. And I think he's got the best out of a team that certainly not in a position where they should have been looking at relegation, not by any stretch. Probably just not quite good enough for the playoffs. But I think he's done a really, really good job. And I've just been looking back while you've been speaking there about sort of comparisons with last season and looking at the current league table. They're 10 points better off than what they achieved in the whole of last season with four games left to play. They've won five games more than they won in last year. They've won more games in the league now this season than Coventry and Hull, which is quite surprising when both of those two are ahead of them in the table. 18 wins for this Cardiff team. That's pretty impressive, to be fair, when you consider that they, obviously they've had a lot of off-field issues in the past. And I think there is some good players within that team. Josh Bowler obviously got the winner at Birmingham on Wednesday night. Really like Josh Bowler. I think he's a good player. Carlin Grant, we've seen in fits and spurts this season. The likes of Reuben Colwell and Ollie Tanner have stepped up at various points in the season. Sinopis has done really well. He's been a really good addition to the squad. Mark McGuinness has been steady at the back. Perry NG, he's been really good at times as well, chipping in with goals as well. So I honestly think Errol Bullock, he's probably done one of the most underrated jobs in the Championship all season, to be fair. I think he's quietly gone about what he's done, not gained a lot of attention, say, outside of the Cardiff bubble, if you like. And they've just ticked along steadily, haven't they? And you look at the position they're in now with four games left to play, they're only 4 points behind Coventry in seventh place. If Cardiff can achieve a top 10 finish, that's a really strong season for them. And Errol Bullock, obviously, as you've quite rightly said, while we're having this discussion, there's uncertainty over his future. But I think if I was Cardiff's hierarchy, I'd be sort of trying to hurry up to get him tied down, to be fair, because he's done a really good job. He was a complete unknown quantity when he came in. And they've had some good results at times. And you think back all the way to the opening day of the season. They were 2-0 up at Leeds and looked really, really good. They were seconds away from winning that game. And that would have been the dream start. So there was certainly an element from day one that he could take Cardiff forward. And he's definitely done that. They finished 21st last season, I think it was. And here we are now with them 11th place with four games to go, 3 points behind 10th. Yeah, I think he's done a really, really good job. So in answer to your question, 100% they should be looking to keep him.
So both in agreement that Errol Bullock should be the Cardiff City manager next season. That marks the end of this week's podcast. Thank you as always for listening. Make sure you are subscribed to this podcast feed wherever you get your pods from. And make sure you're following us on Twitter at ChampChatPod24. You do not want to miss any of the big championship stories in the running. And a huge thank you again to our sponsors, Cards Accepted, for their support this season. If you're looking to take card payments with no contract or monthly fees, make sure you check them out at cardsaccepted.co.uk. Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you again next week for another episode of the Championship Chat Podcast.
This is the Championship Chat Podcast, your home of news, views, and debate from England's second tier.